coming to you live from inside the globe, perched high atop the Bugle Planet building in sunny Gotham City. It's Hey Kids Comics with two guys who are always ready to seduce the innocent, your hosts, Andrew Farmer and the Jedi Cole Houston. And now it's time for Hey Kids Comics.
No, this is Hey Kids Comics. I am Andrew Farmer. With me, as always, host of the show, producer extraordinaire, and dirty whore mouth, Jedi Cole Houston.
You ain't lying.
Oh, God. What a scamp. Jeez it. It's the cops. Damn it.
Oh, jeez. We shouldn't be talking like that, you
oh,
know?
Mister. We shouldn't be talking like that.
Oh, somebody's bound to holler.
Somebody's gonna call your ma.
Bruising for a bruising there, I'm just saying.
Damn it. I don't know why you're climbing the ladder to the heaven that is Jerry Lewis, just rung by rung.
That's right. Gonna, little by little.
Just gonna get there. No, so last week we did the Batman movie Batman franchises and good and bad and otherwise, and I thought that was a great show.
That was a whole lot of fun, an amazing legacy there to travel through. And now we're going to hop on a bumpy road, so fasten your seat belts and leg belts and well, leg pouches and everything.
It doesn't hurt that Cole is as punchy as I've ever heard him right now, so just prepare yourself for... Well,
5 episodes of screen time will do that to a man.
That's right. But tonight we're talking about... The Marvel films, what has come before where we are now? How did we get to where we are? The good, the bad, the indifferent, the licensing, which is the licensing.
Yes, the things that happened to happen and the things that happened that blew us away. That's... A lot of unexpected gems, you know, amid the rubble as well. unexpected gems, Fred.
From the rubble too. That was, God, gross. I can't deal with you.
It's always after my free pebbles.
Well, and you know, in the research for the show, I want to give a top of the show shout out, and we'll follow this on the posts with links to these sites. But there was a great write up that I read in doing the show by the. It's called Cult of Whatever, cultofwhatever.com, called The History of the Marvel Universe. There's a lot of great information in there. Cole and I were talking before the show. MarvelCinematicUniverse.wicca.com, insane. Insane.
It's the sort of thing, if I wasn't doing 5 podcasts and 20 conventions and running 10 websites, I would probably have done myself at some point if I found time.
But... You know, what we're really looking at here is if we're going to look at what came prior to where we are now, we have to look at the fact that when this all started, it started because Marvel was going to go bankrupt. I can't talk. Bankrupt is fine.
They were actually going to go bankrupt because they'd already gone bankrupt, and the court said you can't do that twice, so they invented bankruptcy.
Bankruptcy? It was sort of the last bankruptcy.
Same thing that happened with Match Game. They were the ones who started it. When that game folded, they declared bankruptcy. And nobody? Charles?
Nobody? Anybody? Who's out there?
I said whoopee.
We're going to the Catskills next, so that's just... Fine.
Because this is because the title is assembly required. Everybody's going to be thinking, oh, it's just going to be the Avengers movies or the building toward the Marvel films. But the reality is, you can't look at that. You can't see the building blocks of that any more than the finest monogram or Ravel model kit of a hot rod. You can't look at something like. You have to see where we've come from the age of the carved fertility idol made of stone like the and then we progress forward as materials science advances. SoGo, the Marvel movies.
Okay, I'll let that. Yes, yeah. Yes,
yes. Like, you know, the Dolph Lundgren Punisher, which we mentioned on the first episode of this arc.
Yeah, we're not going to talk about that again.
Is the, you know, that stone idol, basically this primitive representation of something that, you know. If you use your imagination or you're a cinematic archaeologist, you recognize it for what it was meant to be,
so,
I guess.
So, yeah, imagine that it's the early 90s. You're going bankrupt and you're sitting on all this stuff, and movies are starting to get – you're starting to see that maybe you can make some money off of movies. Now, this part has a really specific and interesting legacy for Cole and I. Because the guy that they put in charge of the head honcho for the new Marvel Studios was Avi Arad. And Avi Arad was the guy who was responsible for the Toy Biz Marvel figures up to that point.
Absolutely. In fact, Avi was a major muckety-muckin' player at Marvel at the time. And he was a product of that era that we've talked about often, that brought us Marvolution, that brought the comic industry to its knees.
Right.
Was he responsible for Marvolution? Highly unlikely. Mm-hmm. But he was definitely a key player during that period. Floor. This is the time when they were buying up everything they could, Toy Biz and Skybox for trading cards and all manner of anything. Because of this ill-gotten or ill-conceived empire they wanted to build. And in the end, you know, the one good thing that came out of all this in a way was, apart from financially for Marvel, was the Marvel Films franchise.
Yeah, so what they would do is they would package these movies up in packages. They were a package production movie film studio. So Sony would come to them and say, I want the rights to, you know, whatever, and they would say, yeah, you can have X, Y, and Z, but this is the way it's going to be. You're gonna take the film, the producer, the director, the whole nine yards, and do those movies, and license those. And if you don't do a movie in a certain amount of time, we get the license back. So that created this, this idea that you had to be constantly, regardless of how good, bad, or otherwise you were making them, you had to make these, you had to use these properties or you were going to lose these properties.
Yeah, and it does make one wonder, because that was sort of the situation you ran into that brought us the Roger Corman co-produced Fantastic Four. Because they were, you know, under the gun with this use it or lose it. Of course, it would years later be revealed it didn't matter in that case.
Right.
That was already, you know, this is just like, you know, have fun with it, boys. This is just a feint. This was never meant to happen. That's why we pushed it forward with you guys, because it shouldn't have got this far.
Right.
And at the same time, you can't help but wonder, are they, you know, is this mandate the reason why even what should be your top tier tentpole films are often so bad? Because they're just, we got to do something quick.
Right, right. And so they would have some upstart director basically, you know, saying, "Hey, I can do this. I can make this into something. You just got to give me a shot at it." Like, well, we got to do something with it. So let's go ahead and let them. And then it ends up all being a crap fest because nobody knew what to do with these films. That's I think probably one of the truest statements about this, is that nobody knew what to do with a superhero movie. And we've talked about it before. We talked about it in the first issue of the story arc, is we've got these superhero movies and no one knows how to make them viable. Everybody's scared to put them in costumes. They're scared to do this. They're scared to do that. They're scared to do the other thing. And behind the scenes, while all this is going on, you know, Marvel's starting to see the ability to, hey, we could actually make our own movies. And you start to see that when Kevin Feige comes on board as, you know, kind of Avi's assistant and eventually heir apparent to the Marvel Studios. And when we start to see okay, well, let's start making, you know, a Hulk movie. Let's make a Thor movie. Let's make a Captain America movie.
What does that get us?
Right, right. And there's some really interesting, if you, you know, you can read all of the stuff on you know, Feige's shared cinematic universe.
But what's interesting is I think ultimately Marvel Studios winds up with this. It's the law of unintended consequences in that, okay, we're finally selling these properties with caveats. We're not going to sell you our car so you can paint it fuchsia.
Right.
And put big clown stickers all over it and a flashing light on the top. We're going to lease you our car in a sense.
Right.
And you know, for all intents and purposes, it's your car, but eventually we're going to have some say in what you do with it. We're going to put, like, mileage caps and things like that on it. And that was great up to the point that the brilliant, unthinkable Marvel movie franchise or Marvel Films franchise began to come of its own. And like you're saying, they bought back what properties they could, but other properties were just too valuable to let go.
Yeah. And at the time that they were making this, at the time at which they started, Feige took over, they had to buy Thor back from Sony, Black Widow back from Lionsgate. And the Incredible Hulk, I think they got back from Universal. So,
well, Universal actually they dropped it in the parking lot after the first two movies, and when Marvel Films called and said, "Well, we found your Hulk license," they're like, "Look, I tell you what, we're not that attached to it."
Right. What do you want? What do you want? You want a reward because you found
it? Yeah.
You're not getting a reward.
Tell you what, here's your reward. You keep it.
Right. You figure out what to do with that piece of crap.
You see what you can do with it. Maybe you get that Ruffalo guy who kept coming around and bugging us before. He's pretty wanty.
Get that independent film star, whatever his name is, Ruffalo, over here.
Yeah. Get the Ruffles tater chips here, sour cream and onion Ruffalo.
Get him over here.
Throw him a bone. You know, we didn't want him.
So, yeah, that's
nothing
that
says
from.
The guy that turns into the Hulk like a really scrawny guy with a giant Adam's apple.
I didn't know, right? I didn't know his Adam's apple stays the same size, though. It's like his hair and his Adam's apple stay the same. CG.
They actually put one of those little dots on, like, you know, Andy Serkis dots.
Yeah.
Just his Adam's apple.
Hungry? Don't feel like yourself today? Try some Andy Serkis dots.
You know, they used to have those at the theater, and they just don't anymore.
Yeah, I know. It's hard to keep those things cold.
The American cinema experience is just not what it used
it
to be.
It's not.
That and those Boston baked beans, you're like, is it a peanut? Is it a, what the hell does this
what,
mean
what
to
be? What is this
be?
Covered in?
It's not a bean, and
what
it's,
kind of
I don't
three-mile
know.
Island swamp thing, love canal yeah. bullshit is this?
Is this just like some peanuts somebody scraped off the bottom of the Planters factory? I don't know.
An entire box of those little white dots they put on snow caps.
Oh, that's, yeah.
Those are the Andy Serkis dots. That's what those are.
But you know, I think that Marvel began to feel a little bit of seller's remorse, if you will.
Well, yeah.
Because they packaged these things up in a tight little bow. And they had sold the rights to their movies the way they sold the rights to their other intellectual property. In that, I know a little bit about the way things like, if you ever went to like a Spencer's Gifts or your favorite comic book shop 10 years ago or so, and you saw like, oh, look, here's a package set of Fantastic Four glasses, and three out of four were the FF, and one of them was Paste Pot Pete. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, here's a mug. Why? Who thought that anyone would want a coffee mug with what's his name, Vermin from Spider-Man?
Jackal.
And the reason was that literally Marvel told you, you're like, I want to do a series of Spider-Man, you know, socks. Okay, great. You can do Spider-Man, Green Goblin, Rhino, and Frogman.
Frogman.
And yeah.
Why?
Hydro Man. I've got to spend money to program an embroidery machine to make freaking Hydro Man. If you want the Spidey socks, You do what we tell you. And in much the same way, it's like, okay, if you want Spider-Man, you get Hydro-Man. And then they're like, well, shit, we could have used Hydro-Man for this. I mean, he'd been great. Now we have to either create a new character or find somebody else who's watery.
But that's what happened, right? Because
we had to lease Quicksilver for no good reason.
Because I remember when we were...
That's like Silver was the Hydro-Man socks of Age of Ultron.
That's absolutely true. But I remember when they were announcing that there was going to be an Iron Man movie. And at the time, you young whippersnappers don't remember, Iron Man wasn't the most popular comic book character. He wasn't even... He was a beast. He was a stringer on the Avengers at that point. Like, he was a founding member of the Avengers. He had a book. He had one book, maybe two books at that point. But he was not what we know him as today. So when you announce that you're going to do a Jon Favreau-directed blockbuster Iron Man movie, everybody's kind of like, why the hell would you do that?
Oh, yeah, and I think second only at the time was Thor.
Right.
Thor, to me, seemed like the hardest sell. And that, oddly enough, came out the summer that Stu Balk from Midnight Movie Cowboys was on holidays in America, and we drug him into the theater to see it. He didn't want to.
He also hates Liam Hemsworth. Yeah. So it had to be a hard sell.
That was really the big problem. It wasn't so much that it was Thor. It was that bloody idiot on that stupid sofa. My bloody wife was just stupid. I hate him. So, there you have to put that in the mix as well.
I don't understand why the only accent that you can do is the hardest accent to do. That's always confused me.
Oh, yeah?
Australian
accent, the second thing.
It's only second to South African in the hardest accents to master.
That is a tough one there.
But you can't do like Ben Affleck.
Because I can do a great Paul Hogan.
Sure.
But my Neil Blomkamp sucks.
You're what's the guy's name from District 9 and Murdoch from the A-Team movie? The guy, Shirito Copley? That guy, that unplaceable accent.
That weird ass accent from what was that movie with Matt Damon? You know, where they had the utopian habitat ring. But was it Charlize Theron was in that?
Yes.
Or
yes.
Yeah. What the hell was that accent? It was
she didn't even know. Cole.
It was like this is the accent that comes with that fake language from Blade Runner. I know what it was. I actually just now figured out it was Esperanton.
Oh, she's the only... No one's ever heard of her. She's the sole
thing. Yeah, it's like the... like in Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. No one in living memory has heard this spoken aloud, so...
We are going completely off field. I don't care. I'm watching the movie SWAT. I think it was SWAT with Colin Farrell and Al Pacino. Was it Al Pacino? No, I don't remember, but it was SWAT.
That was that mosquito horror movie that you're thinking of.
The Mansquito? Mansquito?
Oh, SWAT.
Oh, I was going to say, don't get me started on Mansquito, because I can talk for days about Corin Nimick and Mansquito. But but no, because one of the characters was on a bus, and she was like, I speak Esperanto, and I just turned the movie off. I'm like, I'm done with this. Nope, I'm not watching this. But no, Iron Man, they say there's going to be an Iron Man movie, and of course at that point, no one really understood, I guess most comic fans. Because keep in mind, the internet, again, wasn't what it is today. I can't go search for why is Iron Man coming before Marvel releases a Spider-Man movie and find out, oh, they can't. Oh,
yeah,
shit, they can't. So they had to go to their roster and be like, who can we choose?
It's almost like the T-shirts for Death of Superman that had the funeral procession. And I forget who it was, like Robin had to replace... it wasn't even Robin because they couldn't use Robin, but Batman and Robin were tied up with Tops,
yeah,
and other properties because at one time DC suffered the same sort of fate where they were, had licensed stuff out in such a way that they couldn't use it themselves, And there were these licensed, these T-shirts they were putting out, but they couldn't have Batman appear, and somebody else had to come in, like Cyborg or somebody.
Right. It's like stand Cyborg next to him. Like, no, no.
Yeah, and, you know, he's important, but he's not pallbearer status.
It's true. That's true. So, and that's how we get to where we are now, was, okay, so who can we get to play Iron Man? Robert Downey Jr. And everybody's like, no, wait, yeah, absolutely, yes.
Oh, I remember the time, like, talk about casting the type, haha. Because I really had little exposure to him. I mean, Weird Science was probably the largest role I'd personally seen him in a movie from beginning to end.
Yeah.
And they, I'm thinking, oh, wow, yeah, great. But, you know, then, of course, you see the movie, and it's like, wow, he's actually, this was the movie he was born to.
Yeah, right? Like, I know he's been through some stuff, but this is how he comes out the other side. And he did it, and that was the beginning right there. No doubt in my mind. If it wasn't for Robert Downey Jr. in Iron Man, we would not have a Marvel Cinematic Universe right now, period.
And yeah.
But, you know, if you go now, the really interesting thing that I like to look at and kind of examine is, when did they start thinking about the cinematic universe as a whole? Were they thinking about it prior to these movies, or was this something that they knew right away that they were going to start running?
Yeah, that, you know, it had to have had some serious thought put into it, because what happens when you put a lot of thought into a long game like this is that you get an amazing long game. If you don't put a lot of thought into anything,
right,
you get Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice.
Oh, man.
AKA Race to the Finish Line.
Failing upwards.
This is shit. It is literally, I'm sorry, you know, with due deference to DC and to Warner Brothers, what we're getting is essentially hopping on the bus and getting off at the stop right before the end of the marathon, because that's what they're doing.
So what you're saying is they're cheating. They're trying to cheat.
They're cheating their audience, because they're looking at what Marvel did and say, you know, there's a quicker way to do that. Why make a bunch of quality movies where you can just shove a bunch of crap together and, like, there you go, Extreme Justice League. But that's next week, so I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves.
So, we're talking about, you know, building this universe that they built. So for you as a fan, and we've been fans for a really long time of comic books, what did you feel was the most important? Because there are a lot of these movies, by the way, that aren't – and we had to accept this a long time ago – that aren't for comic book fans. They're trying to attract a whole different audience.
And, absolutely.
And what for you makes this superior? What for you makes this a thing that's really great?
The way that this works, or the reason that it works, is that very thoughtful approach to realizing we've got to bring in the non-comic audience in the way the Dark Knight did. And the reason the Dark Knight brought that audience in is that, you know, they gave you a quality movie. They gave you a movie that non-comic fans could go see, that non-comic fans could go see with comic fans and realize, hey, I'm not a comic fan, but I love this movie because it's a good movie. And that's the big difference is, and it's something that Warner didn't realize from the outset, is that, you know, they saw the success of Dark Knight and read the wrong part of the letter. You know, fandom, the movie-going audience wrote a love letter to Warner, and Warner read the wrong part and imagined, oh, we got to cancel anything that's, you know, wholesome and fun and happy because dark sells. No, dark doesn't sell. Good sells. Make a quality movie. And that's what they were doing from the outset. They made Iron Man approachable, and they did what Marvel Films has done best, and that's put out ad campaigns that bring in the non-fans.
Well, they've also cast people that – they've cast people in roles that people want to see. They've cast good actors, not the most popular actors out there until more recently, I think. More recently, we've started to see – once they built that established base, you started to see a lot more like big-budget actors. But you've got to remember, guys, if you remember anything, it's this. When Robert Downey Jr. was cast, this was his third chance. He had not achieved stardom. He was a recovering drug addict. He was a recovering alcoholic.
He was almost better known for that than for being an actor, for his roles in cinema.
No, he absolutely was better known for that. It would be like if Charlie Sheen was a good actor. You know, that's
what he would have
been. That's what he would have been.
Oh, exactly. Because it was sort of like, you know, if you can't be famous, be infamous.
Chris Evans was a good actor, but he had not had a big break. He had been Johnny Storm in the Fantastic Four movies. He had been he had been in the movie Losers, which was a great movie, you know, based on a DC comic book. I think it was based on a Vertigo comic book, if I'm not mistaken. You'll have my head if I'm wrong. That's fine. But it's another one of those situations where he wasn't an actor. He wasn't a big name. You know, they took a shot on him. Another one, this Chris Hemsworth guy. Nobody in the U.S. really knew who Chris Hemsworth was.
Oh, yeah, except for Stu, just solely by virtue of him visiting. But and I think Chris Evans was in, what was that movie, Cellular?
Was he in Cellular?
I believe he was the lead in Cellular.
Cellular. And the only real recognizable, I guess, the guy that played Hawkeye, the guy, I can't think of his name right now. He was fairly recognizable, but Scarlett Johansson was by far the most recognizable person of the bunch, by far. And
oh, absolutely.
And so they did not go big budget on these movies. It wasn't until the second wave of movies did we start seeing people. And even then, let's take Guardians of the Galaxy, for example. They hired a pro wrestler. They hired a comedic, out-of-shape comedic actor from Parks and Rec to play Star-Lord that everybody was like, what the hell are you thinking?
Everybody who knew. I mean, I had no clue going in, so I had no speaking to the idea of, Dave Bautista, I'm like, oh, joy.
Right.
Wizard finally getting their if you're familiar with Wizard magazine, their casting call always had a wrestler.
Yes.
Every single comic book based movie had to have a wrestler. That was like their go-to. But, you know, here they actually got somebody who was having fun with the role and doing some neat stuff with it. I was rather impressed. So I had to kind of eat my words on that end. But they did put a lot of thought into it. But Guardians of the Galaxy and Ant-Man were a pair of just, whoa. You know, everybody was waiting. There were so many hits in a row.
Yeah.
That, you know, I can't remember which came out first, Guardians or Ant-Man.
Guardians.
Yeah. So yeah. Guardians comes out. Everybody's like, well, this is the one. This is the one. I'm thinking, I'll go see it eventually. And then the ad campaign hit. And they did something very clever. And I think this is the beginning where you really see this distinction. I think it was always there, but it was never as obvious as it was with Guardians. And here's a movie, like so many really good pop culture films, that's as good for the story and for the acting as it is for the clever weaving. It was the big chill of Marvel movies.
Right. Right.
Because, you know, there was that one scene where Drax and Rocket and Groot and everybody, they're all cleaning up the Milano.
Yes.
And after dinner, and they're putting all the dishes away and everything, and they're playing popular culture music. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. That is the big chill.
The cast of L.A. Law was there. I didn't know what that was about.
But... William Hurt was Groot. It was weird. But
damn it, can it? Can we make that happen? Can somebody? I'm Groot.
I'm Groot. It's like Vin Diesel, except his exact same tone every time. Kind of like when he was in Lost in Space, completely phoned in. Little known fact, his entire performance added in post production.
It was all ADR. The entire thing was ADR.
It was all B-roll.
He had circus dots on him.
He had Andy Circus dots, but a bad case of them too.
Sir Andy Circus peanuts.
It was the Andy Circus elephant in the room. Let me tell you.
But what's really interesting about what you're saying is there are. You know,
absolutely
nothing. I just want to make sure you know that. Is when you're, if you go back and you read, because I did a lot of research for this, when you go back and you read interviews with Feige about how to build this thing, right? From beginning to end, like he's quoted many places as saying, I really, this is the way Kevin Feige works. He's like, I really wish that there was a recipe on the wall, like the soup Nazi from Jerry Springer, that I could have just said, that's it. That's how you build a connected universe. But he said, no, he's like the number one thing is we all decide on something. We pick the cast, we pick the writers, we get everybody on board, we get the directors, you know, they have, I'm not even going to call it luck, you know, Favreau, the Russo brothers, Adam McKay for his part in Ant-Man.
Yes,
it was great. They said we all just hold hands and we jump out of the plane. He's like, make a decision and then we just swing big. We swing as wide as we can at it and do everything that we can. I mean, hell, they made a division of Pinewood Studios out in Georgia to film these movies that has it has its own Home Depot. Like, I don't know if you know that. It has its own Home Depot that's fully staffed and only serves Pinewood Studios for when they're building sets and things.
And ironically, the actual wood of the pine tree, only the number three bestseller.
Only the number three bestseller there.
It's the damnedest thing. It's washers.
It's just all
it's the old adage, Hollywood runs on washers.
Hollywood runs on locking washers.
That's right. Hollywood runs on washers, old Hollywood.
He said early on, after the success of the Avengers, they really didn't have too much of a plan for anything after the first Avengers movie. Because they didn't know what the success of an Avengers movie would look like. Because you had Iron Man, you had Thor. Individually, they had done really well. But it wasn't really well the way that we look at a Marvel. What did Spider-Man do, you know, in gross?
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't that kind of good. So they said, we don't know what's going to happen. So we're going to not...
Let's not get too far ahead of ourselves.
But that's why the next wave of movies up to Age of Ultron were very, very good, just like the first wave were, because he says by the time that came around, we started looking at setting up the next thing. So yeah. Avengers Age of Ultron, setting up the next thing, was a downfall for them that they had to overcome. Age of Ultron, Civil War, he's like, I didn't like the way that those things happened. And I like that, and I want to, you know, I really want to say that it takes a pretty big man to admit that fact.
Exactly.
To say we made these mistakes and we want to correct those mistakes.
It's interesting that the speaking toward the ad campaigns, like Guardians of the Galaxy, the ad campaign just sucked me in. Ant-Man. Very much the same. Ant-Man was the one that everyone was certain. Okay, yeah, sure, Guardians had a fighting chance. We admit that now. But Ant-Man, this is the one. They're going to make a buck and a quarter at the theater.
Right.
And it blew everybody out of the water. And it was two things. Again, it was taking a different approach to the story craft in the same way that they realize you can't do Captain America with Ant-Man. You can't do Iron Man with the Guardians of the Galaxy. They have to be their own thing. They have to have their own flavor. They still work within those their respective universes and have that connection. by bringing like Falcon in, bring Mackie in to reprise his role as the Falcon was a masterstroke because it connects the character to the greater universe without having it shoved down your throat the way you thought was going to happen in Spider-Man Homecoming from that ad campaign.
Right.
And yet it didn't, which was refreshing. And it still is its own thing because it has its own flavor. It's like a whole separate kind of movie where it's got little quirks and a little bit of fun, and it's kind of poking fun at itself because it has to. The only way you can sell Ant-Man is to let Ant-Man not take itself too seriously.
Right, right.
And it works brilliantly, but can you plug the next Marvel movie into that formula? No, and that's the strength here. The real spine of this juggernaut, where it's got like that Hercules shrew interlocking spike kind of spine that can hold like 100 times its own weight.
Sure.
Yeah, that's your natural history moment for this show. You get – or hero shrew. I'm sorry, not Hercules shrew. Damn it.
It's okay, Cole. It's all right.
I'm afraid my card's just been recalled from the Museum of Natural History. They told me I'm off the cake. But the – and we had a field trip.
Oh, man.
I know. The strength of this thing is the fact that they learned very early on, give each film its own flavor, and you whip them all together like, you know, one of those like Jamba Juice things where it's like all kinds of different flavors for each of the ensemble movies.
Right.
I guess that's what they do at Jamba Juice. I've never said
I don't know. I don't know what they do at Jamba Juice. They put some protein in something.
Yeah, there's like some powder. It's like Orange Julius, but not as cloyingly sweet. Cloyingly. Damn it. Language.
You're still recovering. People. Hey, listen.
Yeah, I am recovering infiniconic.
No, so here's my thing, right? And here's something I definitely wanted to get to for this show is in this particular episode is the idea that the most brilliant thing I think that they did early on was realize, okay, we need to figure out a way to start bringing these people together, to start bringing these disparate heroes together in this franchise. So how are we going to do it? We're going to invent a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent by the name of Coulson, and we're going to have him be the one that brings everybody together.
Coulson becomes the needle.
Oh, it's so good.
That carries the thread, sewing all of these disparate elements into this crazy quilt we call Marvel movies.
But the most amazing thing about Coulson,
My grandma gave me that analogy, by the way.
The most amazing thing about the creation of the character of Coulson, first of all, Clark Gregg is an amazing actor. Like, yes. They picked so well for that particular role that I don't even know how they would have cast that, because it's so against it's so against type for what that role would be. If I came to you and if I came to Cole and said, "Hey, I got this idea. We're gonna have this S.H.I.E.L.D. agent that's going to be in charge of recruiting and running the Avengers." You know, it's not going to be Nick Fury. We're going to have Nick Fury, but it's not going to be Nick Fury. Don't worry, Samuel L. Jackson has been here for 10 years waiting. It's fine.
Practical Hollywood doctrine would say, well, is Arlie Ermey still doing that mail call show?
Right? That's what I'm saying. No, we're going to get this fairly soft-spoken guy, the stage actor, to come do it. And you're like, what? Why would you?
Yeah, it's like, why would you cast Mel Brooks over Mel Gibson?
But
because that's essentially what you're doing, is you're like, you know, we want a Mel Brooks type, not a Mel Gibson type, and it works.
But at the end of the day, and spoiler alert, right?
You're right.
Coulson dies in the Avengers. Sorry if anybody didn't know that already.
And like Darth Maul should have stayed dead. Not a popular opinion, I know.
But we were more upset at his we were more invested in the character they created to build the Avengers than the Avengers themselves.
If Tony Stark had died, we would not have shed as bitter a tear.
Correct. This guy was, because they introduced you to Everyman every man was going to build the Avengers because it was necessary. Every man was your investment piece. And they did that. And since then, it's one of those that spreads life from nothing into something. It's from the film, it went to TV and comic books, which is such a rarity in these things. We talk about Harley Quinn being the same, where she started in the animated show and made it into the comics. Well, Coulson by far is the most, is equally as impressive. Not to mention, these movies introduced the true Sizzler and post credits scenes. Prior to that,
nothing made you want to stay through the credits more than at least on the same level as a Jackie Chan film, like these movies.
But my thing is, prior to that, you would have blooper reels. You would have things like that.
These bleeds? Anybody remember Cannonball Run?
Yeah, see? You would have that stuff. Now you had... They didn't take the time in the movie to do it. They were like, stick around after the trailers so that you can witness what's coming. And that was ingenious. That was absolutely genius.
Well, they're pre-selling the next movie,
right?
To the smarter elements of their audience, who know to await this very special. Or you would hear about it later, like that. Oh, I didn't know there was something after the end of Shrek, or I guess Shrek 2, or one of those where it had Donkey and Dragons children. What spoiler?
Good Lord. First of all, but, how do you know that? Second of all, why do you know that?
There's all kinds, and I've got the knowing of a lot of things that I wish I didn't.
So as we come along into the tooth into this episode of Hey Kids Comics, where do we go from here? So
I think we need to quickly insinuate that in the midst of all this, much like that Marvel movie timeline. There were other things going on concurrently, and that is things like the X-Men franchise and the Spider-Man franchise. And what should have been raising the bar wasn't. Look at Amazing Spider-Man or Spectacular Spider-Man. Where the hell the one was with Shocker?
Yeah, Amazing Spider-Man.
I mean, this up there with Batman and Robin...
Oh, I would say it would, but
it had a lot of the same sort of Adam West Batman elements.
I guess, yeah.
You know, like running the city power grid on live animals.
Right. I guess that's true.
Let me tell you, you don't want to be the guy who has to come clean out the eel poop.
You do.
On
no,
a daily
you're
basis.
Fine if that's what you want to do. Yeah. Listen, don't tell people what they can do. Let them clean out the eel poop.
The Capro technicians what they can and can't do.
That's right.
But there were so many like silly and pointless elements. There were was a confusing non-reboot.
Yes.
Of the X-Men franchise that was right up there, you know, it just opened the door for Prometheus.
Listen,
but people don't know that, and they're not sure what to do with it. And
I appreciate
then you
your
get,
opinion about the Marvel reboot franchise, but I also think that those were some of the best X-Men movies that you could have gotten.
Oh,
your
they
hands
were
on.
Great X-Men movies. I just think people. Most people, myself, you and I, we got it.
Right.
And we love the nods to what came before while also acknowledging, no, this isn't going to be the prequel to what went before.
Right.
And we're going to show you that if you're smart enough to catch that the reason these things aren't happening the way you want them to is this isn't a prequel.
Right.
You've grown up on prequels. It's time to spread your wings and fly. And then you got things like the awkward Fantastic Four franchise that didn't know what it wanted to be when it grew up. And then you got the Fantastic Four reboot that really didn't know what it wanted to be at all because there was a pissy director and a, a Hollywood system that just ate him alive. And, you know, he was hired in on the basis of doing a film that really, to me, was not practice for a major superhero film based on an existing property.
What are you talking about? Who are you talking about?
The Chronicle guy.
Oh, no, you're right.
I did finally see Chronicle, and Chronicle is a damn fine film, but it's not a Hollywood system film, and it is not Fantastic Four with constant notes from upstairs.
Right. It's not a Marvel Studios film where you're going to have the backing and kind of the hand, you know, rubbing the back, saying it's okay, we'll figure this out, which is what they've done with all of their not big, huge blockbuster directors that they've brought in and allowed to make Marvel movies.
Exactly. And then the ones that they did, I mean, it didn't matter who directs Thor 2 through whatever. The way you make Thor work the first time is Kenneth Branagh.
That's the way you make anything work the first time.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if he can make Shakespeare accessible to an entire culture that is, you know, 30 generations removed from Britain.
Right.
You know, my great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandmother might have given a shit about Shakespeare. Until Branagh.
Right, right.
And I felt like I was channeling great-great-great-great-great-great-great-Grammy. It was amazing. But, you know, seriously, though, they chose wisely as to how they meted these things out.
Right.
And you know, another brilliant thing is Favreau building himself a little mini franchise there. You know, it's like, I don't have to be in a Marvel movie, but if the phone rings, I'm there.
Well, I think that Thor was okay. So Thor was interesting to me, and here's why. You had Branagh directing it, right? You had Hopkins as Odin, which was huge. That announcement
came out.
That announcement came out, and I was So you've all of a sudden given
it was like Silence of the Goats that pull Thor's chariot.
Silence of the Goats. You have immediately now said we are taking these Marvel these comic book movies and taking them to another level of class and distinction, because we have Branagh directing this thing, we have Silence of the Lambs guy, we have we have Anthony Perkins. I think wasn't he dead by then? We had Anthony Hopkins as Odin. And then we round out the cast with,
and
like,
All Father is a Boy's Best Friend.
And then we round out the cast with, like, who played Heimdall?
Yes, Idris Elba.
Idris Elba as Heimdall. You had Ray Stevenson.
Idris Elba.
You had Ray Stevenson as Falstag. You had, like, all this brilliant, great casting in this movie, and all of a sudden, you had to look at this as a film. No longer looking at it as a stupid comic book movie. You were now watching a film with Oscar winners in it playing these parts.
Exactly. And then all of a sudden, Marvel movies become like the damn Love Boat or Fantasy Island. Everybody wants a shot.
That's it. But that's the thing, right? Like, now it becomes just the fun thing to do in Hollywood.
So, yeah, it's like, if you haven't been in a Marvel movie, what the hell's wrong with you?
I'm kind of surprised Judy Dench hasn't showed up in one yet, to be honest.
Well, isn't her character finally dead? She's, like, freed up now?
Isn't she dead in the James Bond franchise?
Yeah, she's like, well, fine, I could be in a bloody Marvel movie.
That's right.
Like my old pal Tony.
Right, exactly.
Because it just seems to me like Dame Judi Dench would have the power to call Anthony Hopkins my old pal Tony.
You know she does. But yeah, but no.
Oh, Tony, you old queen.
But it has to be frustrating for Sony and for Fox and for a lot of these movie houses, these production houses, to watch what Marvel's doing and then look at their franchises that they have on license from Marvel.
Yeah. And they, it's like, we're having to pay them
Right.
We can't do jack diddly, and we're also financing their good stuff. But by God, we are not letting go of this for love or money.
Thank God that somebody finally over at Sony, right? I'm not
crazy. Sony, like, had finally, someone had managed to auger their head far enough out of their ass to begin to see some light of day and realize that, you know, if we all play on the same field,
everybody wins.
Yeah.
Everybody wins.
And, you know, Spider-Man Homecoming becomes a much better picture, as does Civil War in many ways, yes, because of this new synergy. And how brilliant for Spider-Man Homecoming to open with Civil War from a whole, and it's all like all new stuff.
Right.
That they probably shot at the same time, but they, you know, it wasn't just like, I always hate it when like, let's see what the hidden camera showed. And it's like, well, this is like, does the hidden camera have a director? Because you have the same and an editor, because it looks just like the film we just saw. It's funny that it just irks me when nobody spends the time and money to shoot things that look like they were shot from somewhere else by a camera that wasn't a professional one.
Right.
Like, wow, let's look at the ATM footage. Wow, the ATM has six cameras.
And, yeah, right? It's got a boom mic. And
it has a second unit director.
It's got craft services.
That's right. You've got a B-roll. What the hell? But, you know, it's just the sort of brilliant thing that I will not concede being wrong about there never being an Avengers film, because that was a statement that I made at a time when you couldn't have, because there were all of these independent studios in receivership, as it were,
right,
of all these disparate properties. And there was no way in hell, no one could have foreseen even Spider-Man Homecoming.
No.
You know, 10 or 15 years ago, the thought of an Avengers movie, or 10 years ago even, seemed an impossibility because of the nature of things. Even after that was no longer the case, Spider-Man Homecoming still seemed inconceivable, because there was just no way that Sony was ever going to give up that cash cow. At least they were having some success with it, because they could occasionally get a good writers and directors and put together a decent film when they weren't just being stupid.
Right, when they didn't have their heads up their asses.
So, you know, this is what you get. But at the same time, I think it was a boon that these properties were elsewhere. Otherwise, Infinity Gauntlet would cost more than the gross national product of three European countries combined.
That's true.
There isn't enough money in the world. I'm amazed that Infinity Gauntlet is even a thing, quite frankly, because it just, you have this, it's like five feature films worth of expense on actors anyway, on that end of the budget. Because, you know, every time you do an Avengers, every time you expand this universe, that's that many more people you're having to, you know, line up, and that's that many more trailers and that many more makeup artists and hairstylists and costumers and, you know, some beleaguered accountants working around the clock just to figure out how to disappear dead hookers out of that's James Silent Bob Strike Back. You know, but at the same time, I love this. I love that it happened. It is just this impossible fanboy dream that we're all getting to live now. And it's an amazing thing. And that you do now have this sort of synergy between disparate directors within the same universe.
Right.
Where, right, like, I'll come in and direct a sizzler that,
right,
opens the door to my film but includes your actors who won't be in my film.
Or even, from what I understand, a certain, you know, they're bringing in James Gunn to direct certain pieces of Infinity Gauntlet.
Oh, how brilliant. So that you don't lose the feel.
Yeah, because the feel of the Guardians of the Galaxy is different than the feel of the Avengers is different
and
than
I
the
don't...
feel of, you know what I mean? So they're
and
really...
I don't know that happened with Captain America Civil War, but I'll be damned if Paul Rudd, their the Ant-Man, Giant-Man, didn't feel like he just walked right off of Ant-Man.
Well, the problem with
and somehow the directors are doing a good job of keeping the feel of Favreau's Tony Stark or Hopkins's Thor.
Well, I think that the really interesting thing about that is the Russo brothers are so brilliant comedically, because they were comedic directors that ended up in this world doing these big budget action movies. But you know, the Russo brothers, Adam McKay, that group all kind of worked together. So I think it was pretty easy for them to then fold in that Ant-Man sardonic humor into that world. A lot easier than I think it would be for them to fold in what the Guardians of the Galaxy are.
Yeah.
You know, because that's a completely different ballgame. That's a whole different thing. We gotta start wrapping this up, but I want to talk about where.
No.
I know we there's too much to talk about, but I want to talk about where we're going, because they've said that this is after the events of Infinity Gauntlet, this is the last we're going to see of this roster of Avengers. So are we going to see this kind of West Coast Avengery vibe come out of this? Which is, I think we've talked about it before, where you've got Scarlet Witch and Vision and Ant-Man and Falcon. Yeah, and
like Paul Bettany telling his agent to suck it. And
Right. Do we see that coming? What do you see coming?
That is a good question, because I think you're on the right track.
Black Panther as well would be in there.
Yeah, you open the door with so many new characters. You've got Ant-Man. We're introducing Wasp full scale.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
With Ant-Man and the Wasp, which I think is another masterstroke in the midst of all this. And, I mean, there's so many masterstrokes, I'm going to have a stroke.
I'm having a masterstroke right now.
Right now. And it's just brilliant stuff, because you've got Sebastian Shaw signed for like 110 movies, because what the fuck does he want to do anything else for?
Right.
Who cares if you're typecast at this point? You're typecast in Marvel movies, which well into your decrepitude, you could be wheeled in front of an audience at a convention and sign your name and make $500,000 a year.
Right. And residuals on these movies.
Yeah, exactly. So you just sit back and wait for the gravy train to come in you know, he is going to be your Captain America, your U.S. agent, your Nomad, your Wheelie and the Chopper Gang, whatever the various incarnations of Cap have been. With the exception, I hope to God, I pray right now, as in Henry V, I cry most contrite tears in hopes that there will never be a Hail Hydra Captain America, because it's stupid. Okay, moving on. But the thing about it is, Captain America, Agent of Hydra.
I think we have to now say also, just concerning the climate of the times, that we are not Nazis. So I think that has to be the litmus test now. So no, how could I enjoy?
I'm afraid that now we will never see Hugo Weaving reprising his role, because we're all going to be so terrified of Nazis, even though he was sort of like his own breakaway Hydra
sect. Yeah, but
the fact that Seinfeld episodes are now being replaced by the soup angry guy.
the soup serial killer, because that's more.
Oh yeah, that's right, because that's more PC nowadays. Yeah.
Oh my
Much
god.
Much better.
You're right, because you know Sebastian
like
Stan.
Like the Sweeney Todd of soup.
Sebastian Stan is going to be Captain America, they could go with Sam Wilson as Captain America. They have choices now.
That's true.
They have choices now. We're going to have Ant-Man and Wasp. We're going to have Black Panther. We're going to have
who knows what else?
Right. We could just as easily have Rocket Raccoon show up as one of the members of the Avengers now. Who knows?
Practically everybody else was. I mean, Mantis was once a member of the Avengers.
Yeah, yeah. Which, by the way,
she'd come in and seriously screw that group up.
Right.
This version of Mantis. Scotchy, scotch, scotch. I love scotch.
Damn it. Damn it. But my other question then is, how long do we keep our guardians? They're saying that the third one's going to be it for this iteration of the Guardians. This is going to be really interesting because
you know, James Gunn is going to want to do this forever, and he's smart not to.
Right.
He doesn't want to turn into a George Lucas and like just start writing crap down the line. But no, in all seriousness, though, it's a wise way to do this. And can the Guardians franchise work without him? Maybe, maybe not. It's hard to say. But, you know, the Guardians of the Galaxy are one of those stepping stones. Thor was a stepping stone. Doctor Strange was a stepping stone.
Right.
Any of the Avengers builders were in their way a stepping stone just to establish the idea of the superhero. But Thor introduces other realms into the mix.
Sure. Yeah.
Captain America Doctor Strange introduces mysticism into the mix. Guardians of the Galaxy introduces a larger sentient galaxy into the mix. Brilliant work there to introduce aspects of the Marvel Universe that we as fans take for granted, but your average moviegoer is not prepared to accept. How do you make all these things fit together if you're not comic books that have been around since the days when nobody really cared if some new concept was entered into the mix?
How do you do that?
You do these little stepping stones. It's a standalone film with the Guardians of the Galaxy, but all of a sudden, wow, apart from the Sitari, there's even more crap out there. Lots more crap. There's like whole empty head bones full of.
We haven't even talked about Captain Marvel yet.
That's right.
With the Skrull. We're getting the Skrull finally. After how long?
No longer do we have to live with replacement Skrulls.
The Chitauri, the replacement Skrull.
The replacement Skrulls. The Dead Sea Skrulls. Yeah.
I'm not touching the Dead Sea Skrulls. I'm letting that hang. My God, do you have any final thoughts for this business?
I think we really have to pay tribute to one other Marvel film that's outside of the Marvel films franchise.
Is that
one other
movie? David Hasselhoff? Are we talking about David Hasselhoff finally?
We're on the final episode. We're going to talk the hell. That's pretty much all of this. It's called.
All I want to do is talk about David Hasselhoff, though. That's all I want to do.
It's like, what's the Hasselhoff is the title.
If I've seen Hasselhoff on this show, it's because I want to talk about Hasselhoff.
Hoff on this show.
Damn
it. No, it's Deadpool.
Okay.
Arguably the single most successful X film ever.
Right, for sure.
Because it is the un-X film.
Right.
And I shouldn't love it. I shouldn't care. I should decry it as a gratuitously violent farce of a superhero film. But to me, it's like Napoleon Dynamite. If you analyze that movie, it sucks. But I can't help but love the hell out of it. And Deadpool is just such a brilliant way of doing something that shouldn't work and making it work. And for that, I love this film alone, and then just everything else about it. Cicely Tyson just chewing up the scenery brilliantly and amazingly upstaging Deadpool.
Right.
Did any of us think that would be possible in a Deadpool feature film?
Well, I think part of it was an...
Club soda for blood, dumbass.
Well, I think part of it was an understanding that Cicely Tyson needed to upstage Deadpool, you know?
Yes, like, so true.
Like, that's what made it really, really interesting, was that Cicely Tyson, that was something that needed to happen, and they allowed it to happen, and it was so great for it. Like, Deadpool was an amazing movie. There's a part of me that really hopes that with the success of Spider-Man, that they start to allow some of this crossover.
Yes.
I don't know whether it'll ever happen, but...
Well, they also, you know, they need to settle down and figure out who the hell their X-Men are.
Right, right. That's true as well. That's
because, you know, you can't just have anybody show up, "Hi, I'm Iron Man," you know. But you've got Don Cheadle can now take over the Iron Man armor.
Well, John,
you know, you,
Don, it's going to be really interesting what they do with him because of the fact that he's... You know, there was a long stint where War Machine was basically the armor, because Rhodey was damaged. He was paraplegic, and the armor's what kept him going. So I'm curious to see where they're going to take that War Machine. That's really valid. I hadn't even thought about War Machine as a member of the Avengers yet, but that's a really valid.
Especially with that West Coast vibe, because War Machine was very much a part of that.
Absolutely. Oh man, that was a good point.
So good. You know, you've got your basically cheaper Avengers, but no less remarkable, and an entire universe, or the better part of an entire universe to call from.
Right. Oh God, it's going to be really interesting. I'm excited to see what happens and where this goes.
And one thing I would love to see, and of course we know that that Feige listens to the show, of course,
all the time. Just constantly.
Why wouldn't
he? Right.
You know, to the point where people are like, "Come on, do something different, Kevin." But I think if anybody out there is listening to my voice in the void on this topic, what I would love to see is the occasional Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. We had Lady Sif crossover from Thor into Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Let's make it a two-way street. I want to see Crusher Creel.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Show up. I want to see the same actor, you know. I want to make these films a love letter to the fans that are making, that are giving you the love, and give us some little nods like that that say, "Yeah, we know what you're doing. We know we appreciate that you're the backbone of this success." I don't think Hollywood owes anybody anything. You know, they don't own the fandom of any given franchise anything, but occasionally they show that they recognize that, and this franchise has done that so often. How much more wonderful a way, even if you could just borrow Luke Cage for an afternoon to have him just kind of get, you know, knocked over by a bad guy trying to escape, and like, "Oh no, you didn't," and just cold cock him and have to disappear in the shadows because of the plot line of the Netflix shows.
Right. Show us Iron Man or Iron Fist. Allow that to be a part of the lexicon.
If just in like the next Doctor Strange movie, the Defenders all just happen to stroll by out in front of the Sanctum Sanctorum.
Right.
And maybe like, you know, like, what's the matter? I don't know. Just something about this part of town always just, and then they move on, and that's that.
Right, there's nothing there. Oh, yeah.
And then you hear, like, you know, meanwhile inside, and all of a sudden you hear all the sirens. It's like, oh, them again. Because we've established that the two universes coexist. Let that become a two-way street.
Right, for sure.
And hell, bring me some Inhumans onto the...
There's so many ways that this can
go. Into the fray. For whatever the hell they call that, the Infinity Gauntlet thing there.
Well, there's just an insane amount of things that they could take us to, that they could show us. It's just a matter of where they want us to go.
Yeah.
They have control right now. That's the thing.
It is within their power to make me happy, and I think they need to crack down on that aspect of things.
All right. Let's wrap this up. Let's get this handled.
All right.
Oh man, you want to plug us up and we'll get out of here?
Yes, indeed. Well, of course, coming to you not entirely live, but live-ish.
Pretty close.
Yeah, from the Jedi Cole universe at JediCole.com. You can write to us at the newly established the Jedi Cole universe at gmail.com. And or it's just Jedi Cole Universe at gmail.com. If one gets kicked back to you, use the other one. yeah, that's the level of professionality you expect around here, don't you? So, what else can we say here?
Don't you have something coming up this weekend?
Oh, that is true. This very weekend, as you're listening to this, something wonderful is happening. On DallasOnAir.com, the new home of the Rancor Pit Live, live streaming out of Dallas, Texas, beautiful downtown Dallas. The new the Rancor Pit now start is 10:30 to 11:30 a.m. So we're having to get up a little early, and myself and Eddie and the Talk Lord of the Sith. But I'm going to be getting up even a little earlier still, because at 9:30 a.m., the 10:30 a.m., the third Sunday of every month, hopefully for a very, very long time, I'll be producing the Rancor Pit Live, which the aforementioned Rancor Pit Live. I'll be producing my brand new show, live show, Isle of Toys.
I can't wait.
Which is already shaping up to be pretty amazing. The first episode, Think Outside of the Toy Box, is I'm less than a week out. I'm terrified. I'm thrilled. I can't wait to talk about toys, action figures, collectors, manufacturers, the whole nine yards in a new live forum. I was actually developing this show as an audio podcast, and this is thrilling to have the opportunity to not just have to describe how amazingly cool it is to, like, say that there's a Man-Thing build a figure, but to eventually be able to show you once I have one put together, and just to promote that being an adult toy collector is a thing, and how wonderful is that? And not only is it wonderful, but there are so many companies now that's all they care about,
right,
is the adult collecting market. Because if they were selling to kids, only the 1%er kids would be buying any of this stuff.
Jeez, right.
So, because the rest of us are like, have to pick and choose which $300 action figure we want. So, I'm just really excited about this. Isle of Toys, 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. Central, DallasOnAir.com. That'll be the third Sunday of every month, premiering on August 20th, immediately before the Rancor Pit Live, which you'll be able to join Eddie and myself on our Designing Men episode, where we talk about the designers of the Star Wars universe, some of the top people who are behind the designs of Star Wars.
There you go. So, yeah, join us next week. We're going to get into we're getting into the DC movies, so this should be real fun.
Oh, yeah, this will be
if we gush about Marvel movies, the only thing bad things we could say is that they set up the next movie sometimes. Just wait. Just wait for what we have to say about the DC movies. Shit. Oh, my God. All right, everybody. Buy, collect, enjoy your comics.
Can we get four strikes? I don't know.
We're going to try. We're going to go for a 20 count. make sure you tune in and watch not only the Rancor Pit, but Isle of Toys. This has been a labor of love for Cole for a really long time, and I could not be happier that he's getting ready to launch this thing. I'm very, very excited. So with all that being said, enjoy the rest of your week. Go buy some toys and some comics, and tune in next week while we eviscerate some DC movies.
Hell, such a deal.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Good night.